President Duterte's economic managers turned down a proposal to suspend fuel excise taxes. The country's socio-economic planning chief is instead proposing a shift to a four-day work week to mitigate the impact of soaring fuel prices. A show of support by some European Union leaders who visited Ukraine's besieged capital of Kyiv. And Chinese cities step up COVID-19 restrictions amid the latest wave to hit the country. We'll discuss how this new surge in our Asian neighbor could affect the Philippines with infectious diseases expert Dr. Ronjin Solante. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook Live, you could join us today. Topping the midday news, the Philippines' economic managers thumbed down calls to suspend the collection of excise taxes on fuel. The socio-economic planning chief is instead proposing a four-day work week to cushion the impact of rising fuel prices. Pia Gutierrez now joins us with details. Pia, over to you.
Yes, Carmina, the country's economic managers on Tuesday rejected calls for the suspension of excise fuel taxes to address the effects of skyrocketing fuel prices. In a meeting in Malacanang Tuesday night, Finance Secretary Carlos Dominguez said that while suspending fuel excise taxes will bring down the price of fuel to about 10 pesos per liter, it will also result in revenue losses for the government of about 105.9 billion pesos in 2022 for a total of 1.763 trillion pesos for the next 10 years, or an average of 160.3 billion a year for the next 10 years. This is equivalent to roughly 0.5% of the country's GDP. Dominguez said that for 2022, the government has already allocated the expected revenue from excise taxes in the national budget for different expenditures such as the Build program and for the salaries of government employees. And if the taxes were not to be collected, government will then be forced to borrow the money to finance these expenses. He also said that in the end, the higher income earners who have cars and consume more fuel will benefit more from the suspension of excise taxes compared to poorer people who consume less fuel. That is why both the Finance Department and the NEDA recommended to the President the provision of targeted relief to affected sectors. And on top of the 5 billion pesos in fuel subsidies for public transport workers and 1.1 billion pesos in fuel discounts to farmers and fisher folk that will be given in two tranches starting this month and in April, that the Finance Department is also recommending to President Duterte additional targeted subsidies of 200 pesos per month or a total of 2,400 pesos a year to the poorest 12 million households belonging to the bottom 50% of income earners of the country to help cushion the effects of rising oil prices. This will cost the government roughly 33.1 billion pesos in 2022. Dominguez says the funds will be sourced partly from increased VAT collections due to rising oil prices, as the government is expecting an additional 26 billion pesos in VAT collections from March to December 2022, as oil prices already hit $110 per barrel, and this is expected to further increase to 37.5 billion pesos if it rises further to $130 per barrel. The NEDA, meanwhile, also recommends the implementation of a four-day work week to save on fuel and transport costs amid skyrocketing oil prices. Let's listen to NEDA Chief Carl Kenji Chua.
Magtatrabaho pa rin po ang bawat Pilipino na 40 hours per day, pero imbis na sa limang araw ay apat na araw, pero imbis na 8 oras kada araw, magiging 10 oras kada araw.
And lastly, the Labor Department is also proposing the provision of a 24 billion peso wage subsidy for 1 million minimum wage earners from April to June. We have yet to get the specifics on this, but Labor Assistant Secretary Nikki Tutay said that the measure is in support of the National Employment Recovery Strategy. Right now, Carmina, these remain recommendations as Malacanang has yet to confirm whether President Duterte has already approved these proposals from the Department of Finance, NEDA, and DOLE. Carmina?
Yeah, just a quick question right there on these recommendations. Any timeline that the palace has said regarding this? Because, you know, we're racing against time here. There's got to be a decision soon, Pia.
Yes, we got the sense, Carmina, as I said, these already are recommendations from Malacañang, but we have yet to confirm whether President Duterte has approved this. But we got the sense that these are immediate because the effects of rising oil prices are already felt, especially by the poorest of the poor. So government wants to provide these subsidies, this financial assistance to the people as soon as possible, Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Our very own Pia Gutierrez there joining us on the line. Take care, Pia. Keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, the recommendations of the president's economic advisors come after a Philippine House panel approved a bill amending the country's oil deregulation law as fuel prices continue to rise. The proposed amendments seek to institutionalize the minimum inventory requirements for petroleum products to secure supplies and to unbundle the cost of petroleum. Marikina Representative Stella Kimbo says this will prevent oil firms from overpricing their products.
When we unbundle prices, all that means is that when oil companies seek a price adjustment, it's now going to be based on their actual changes in costs. Mm-hmm. Right now, based on the oil deregulation law, they are supposed to submit price adjustments on a weekly basis. And that adjustment is based on a formula that is based on the mean Platts of Singapore. So it's based on an international price reference. With unbundling, and you no longer use that formula, hindi ka pwede mag-increase ngayon because hindi ka pa naman nag-increase pa ng cost na binabenta mo today because binili mo yan at a much lower price 3 months ago.
But another lawmaker believes the oil deregulation law should be scrapped altogether.
Hindi lamang sana amendahan, kundi talagang ibasura na itong oil deregulation law. No? Because after 24 years, nakita natin kung gaano ang napakasamang epekto nito. No? Sa, hindi lang sa ating ekonomiya, kundi sa ating mga mamamayan.
The House Energy Committee is calling on President Duterte to hold a special session to discuss the continuous oil price hikes and the proposed amendments to the oil deregulation law. Congresswoman Kimbo also expressing her disappointment over the Finance Department's refusal to suspend the collection of fuel excise taxes. Kimbo says they're still pushing for a compromise with the DOF since government already receives more from value-added taxes because of the higher oil prices.
What we are proposing is we suspend only the collection of taxes on diesel, LPG, kerosene, because these are the products that the lower income classes tend to use more. And then in the case of gasoline, to not suspend completely the collection, but rather to just simply reduce the tax. If the executive really refuses to do the suspension, wala tayong choice but to allow everybody to give ayuda however they can. In that case, nagiging practical yung need to declare a state of emergency.
The Trade Union Congress of the Philippines defends the huge daily wage hike increase amid the rising cost of basic commodities. The group is seeking a 470 peso increase in the daily minimum wage for workers in Metro Manila. The group also says the government should act soon instead of just waiting for the conflict between Russia and Ukraine to die down.
There has been no wage increase for the past three years and 4 months, so this work, the workers cannot afford to wait any longer. They want a, they need a wage increase as soon as possible.
But employers group is rejecting that proposal, saying small businesses cannot afford to hike salaries. The Employers Confederation of the Philippines also says government should do more to cushion the direct impacts of the rising fuel prices.
If they want to move in to the minimum wage earners in the formal sector, there's a lot of ways. Maybe lowering the price of the fuel, giving a subsidy in terms of for the basic commodities, things like those.
nearly 100 children have died in Russia's invasion of Ukraine. That's according to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. He says the besieged city of Mariupol is now left without any means of communication. Food and water also nearly depleted. Zelensky asserts the West should do more to help Ukraine fight Russia, reiterating his call for a no-fly zone.
We are not asking for much. We are asking for justice. We are asking for real support, which will help us to prevail, to defend our life, life of all the world. Canada is already demonstrating the necessary leadership, already doing first what other countries come up with later. But we need more of your leadership, and we are asking for more involvement from you.
Zelensky also gave an update on the peace talks with Russia. He says the talks are sounding more realistic, but more time is needed to reach any deals. Three European leaders dole out support for Ukraine. Leaders of Poland and the Czech Republic, also Slovenia, arrived in Kyiv Tuesday in a show of high-level support for President Zelensky. Slovenia says it will support Ukraine as it defends fundamental European values.
We are here because you're fighting also our fight. You're not only defending your homeland, you're not only defending the territory of the Ukraine and of the Europe, you're also defending something which we are calling fundamental European values. Freedom, democracy, the right of every person to choose their own life and every country to be sovereign and to choose its own path.
Poland also vowing to never leave Ukraine.
We will try to organize, orchestrate all over the world. We will never leave you alone. We will be with you because we know that you are fighting not only for your homes, for your freedom, for your security, but also for ours.
U.S. President Joe Biden set to make his first visit to Europe since Russia's invasion of Ukraine began. He'll be meeting with NATO allies next week in Brussels to discuss the crisis that has prompted fears of a wider conflict. The White House, however, declined to comment if Biden would also visit Poland to address the refugee crisis. The Russian invasion has prompted over 3 million people to flee their homeland and cross into neighboring countries. Poland alone houses more than half of that number. Meanwhile, Biden has signed the spending bill that contains $13.6 billion in aid for Ukraine.
Putin's aggression against Ukraine has united people all across America, united our two parties in Congress, and united freedom-loving world. It's an act with urgency and resolve that we're doing right now that you've provided me the ability to do. I want to thank the congressional leadership for working so quickly to make sure we have the resources we need, economic, humanitarian, and security, to continue our forceful response to this crisis. We've already committed more than $1.2 billion in security assistance to the people of Ukraine just over the past year.
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, daily COVID cases in South Korea breach 400,000. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. And we're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. President Duterte's economic managers turned down a proposal to suspend fuel excise taxes. The country's socioeconomic planning chief is instead proposing a shift to a four-day work week to mitigate the impact of soaring fuel prices. A show of support by some European Union leaders who visited Ukraine's besieged capital of Kyiv. And Chinese cities step up COVID-19 restrictions amid the latest wave to hit the country. Another grim day in South Korea's fight against COVID-19. For the first time, Korea's Disease Control and Prevention Agency reported over 400,000 new COVID-19 cases just in the past 24 hours. In the past 4 days, single-day infections there stayed above 300,000. Authorities expect the Omicron-fueled surge to peak by next week. Chinese cities begin tightening COVID prevention measures in response to the latest nationwide resurgence. In the city of Changchun, all residents are undergoing a fourth round of mass testing. It is also building temporary hospitals. Jilin announced all of its 24 million residents are prohibited from traveling out of the province. In Shenzhen, where the first resurgence was reported, residents are ordered to work from home. The city is under lockdown as cases spiral. Nationwide, China logged over 3,500 new cases on Tuesday. The resurgence is being blamed on the Omicron variant and imported cases from neighboring Hong Kong. Here at home, Metro Manila stays under COVID alert level 1, along with nearly 50 other areas. Let's get more details in this report.
As the Philippines' COVID-19 cases decline, talks of further scaling back COVID restrictions gain traction. This scenario was initially called Alert Level 0. But details about this particular classification remain unclear, including how to call it.
Kausap natin ang ating mga eksperto kahapon and ang sinasabi nga nila, baka hindi dapat yun ang gawin nating terminology because it's going to confuse people. Baka akalain na wala na tayo dapat pinangangambahan, hindi tayo maging cautious at maging complacent ang mga tao because it's turned zero.
As officials and experts discuss how to safely de-escalate, the health department shared possible changes that would be implemented under a scenario looser than alert level 1.
Hindi na po natin kailangan magpa-dedicate ng bed sa ating mga ospital. Babalik na unti-unti ang non-COVID services. Mai-integrate ang COVID-19 conditions na pumapasok sa ospital sa infectious disease unit ng isang ospital. The mega quarantine facilities na naitayo natin, unti-unti dapat no, na nababago na natin yung ganitong mga sistema para yung resources maituon naman sa ibang mas kailangan natin.
The Philippines is now considered low risk for COVID-19 and areas currently under alert level 2 just need to bump up their vaccination rate to get a downgrade. On the vaccination front, Tuesday marked the end of the country's fourth national vaccination drive. But this will be extended for senior citizens until Friday, March 18th. Health Undersecretary Mirna Kabutahe says this may be the last round of the national inoculation program.
Kasi yung iba naman ay nakaka-taas na, may 70% coverage na ng kanilang fully vaccinated, pati yung kanilang A2. So ang tututukan na lang natin yung mga iba't ibang, lalong-lalo na yung mga syudad na hindi nakakamit ng kanilang parameters na fully vaccinated, at least 70%.
In the meantime, the National Capital Region stays under alert level 1 until the end of March, along with 47 other areas.
Infectious diseases expert Dr. Ron Jane Salante now joins us to give us his take on the latest developments in the battle against this pandemic. Dr. Salante, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Yes, good afternoon, Carmina.
All right, so let's begin with what's happening in China. You've got businesses shut. You've got 24 residents of Shenzhen placed under quarantine. This is because, of course, of the Omicron variant. What do we know about the possibility of a resurgence here at home? And what is the appropriate response now, given what we're seeing in China, Dr. Salante?
Yes. What happened in China can still happen in the Philippines. And the increase of the cases is driven by the BA2, which is now the dominant variant of concern globally. And what are the characteristics of this BA2? It's highly transmissible. Its protection against the current vaccine may have waned, or its protection is lower. And that's the reason why we need a booster dose. In China, they rely on the primary vaccine series, and they have not yet had this wave coming from the Omicron. So this is expected in countries where Omicron has not yet caused a wave. And that's why, in this manner, this is also what happened to South Korea and also in Hong Kong. So I think our government, no, we should be preparing for a possibility of another surge or a pandemic or what we call spikes. No? Although we are now in a better scenario because a lot of us are vaccinated, we have developed immunity coming from the surge of Omicron last January, but we still need to continue and continue with our mitigation measures like testing, isolation if there are those symptomatic, and particularly the vaccination.
Well, you said it right there, Dr. Salante, that BA2 is more transmissible than the original strain. It's also being called the stealth variant of the Omicron. But when you have a lot of these restrictions now being eased and you have this kind of a variant, how do you think how ready are we at this point? Because, you know, when you look at the rural areas and in the provinces, Dr. Salante, there's still a high number of unvaccinated individuals.
Yes, correct. No, that's why the current shift now is not to have that mindset that we are zero. We still are in the pandemic. The WHO has not yet declared that we are out of the pandemic. And with that, there's still a possibility of a spike and surge. And remember, Carmina, no, there's also what we call waning immunity. Waning immunity after 3 or 4 months with a vaccine and higher risk of getting reinfection. And I think that's what's happening now in Korea. And a lot of them are reinfection. That's why it's important for us. No, we continue to encourage the local government, our people, the healthcare workers, to encourage everybody to get the vaccine, to get the booster, because that's one way that we can control that we cannot get the more severe form of infection.
Yeah, what's lacking in the messaging here, Dr. Salante? Because there has been a decline in all those lining up for booster shots. And yet here we are talking about the BA2 subvariant. Later on, we're going to talk about Deltacron. And while we're still talking about booster shots, other countries are now considering a fourth shot.
Precisely the point here is that because of that element of complacency, that they're looking at the metrics that the healthcare utilization is going down, the cases are going down. So it is expected from these people, no, that there is this, okay, I will not have the vaccine. I have not been vaccinated. I did not get the infection. For me, the cases are going down, so I will not get the vaccine. So we need to communicate. We need still to engage these people who has not been vaccinated, especially in remote areas. No, there should be some plan on how we can reach out to these people. If we will do house-to-house, that's better. Like if you're a worker, if the company will require you to get the booster before you can go back to the workplace, these are important measures that can also supplement the effort of the government.
Yeah, but shouldn't we be, you know, right in the thick of things as we speak, Dr. Salante? We've been in this pandemic. We've seen how the game plan of the government has evolved since day one of the pandemic, and yet we still have those unvaccinated individuals. And I'm not just talking about those who choose not to get vaccinated, but we're talking about logistics here. That seems to be a problem still for some areas.
Correct, and I agree with that. No, and I think this will now be the part of the local government. If they are running for the post, or if some of these officials are running for the post, they should prioritize now vaccinating the population where they are living, part of their constituent, to be vaccinated and to be given the booster. I think that will be important enough to make these people convinced that the importance of vaccination, because there should be leaders in this local government unit. There should be leaders in these areas that should drive more vaccination. There should be good implementation. There should be good, they should incentivize vaccination, like working, and they should be vaccinated or something like that. No, otherwise, this will be the gaps where we really can have again spikes and surge of cases of special DBA2.
I mean, in the early days of this pandemic, the fear really was that this issue is going to be politicized. But now that we're in the thick of things, just a few months away from the May 9 elections, it seems that it's headed that way. What are the dangers of this pandemic being politicized, this whole vaccination program getting politicized?
Okay. The virus cannot be politicized. It can transmit to anybody. It can have that opportunistic tendency that anybody that has a weakened immune response will get the virus. Now, we should stick to the science. What are the measures that we can control and we can prevent transmission? These are important measures. As we go to this possible super spreader event, we should remember there's still an ongoing transmission. There's still a possibility that you can be infected. You have to protect yourselves. We should be erasing. There should be zero complacency when we are in these political rallies, when we are in these possible gatherings.
What can you tell us, Dr. Solante, about the fourth dose? Does evidence now show that it's becoming more and more apparent that this is going to be needed?
Yes, a lot of countries now, no, outside the Philippines, like in some Asian countries like Vietnam, Thailand, are already implementing the fourth dose. And these are mainly targeted towards those 60 years old and above and those who are immunocompromised. Why? Because with BA2, with the booster, you still have an ample protection. But if you are in this population where protection is also very low, especially with the BA2, then you are higher risk to develop the infection and higher risk to get the more severe form of the infection. That's why the current recommendation is a fourth dose or a second booster only for this selected and targeted population.
Can you explain to us the difference, Dr. Solante, between a fourth dose or a second booster compared with revaccination, like another round of vaccination, because it's essentially two jabs as well? Give us a difference.
Okay. When you say revaccination, so you already received the two primary vaccine series. Mm. And when you get another revaccination, then two primary vaccine series, only that you have to repeat it, okay, with the same interval. So for example, I got Sinovac in the primary vaccine series, mm-hmm. interval of 4 weeks, mm-hmm. then I get another revaccination using another platform, let's say Pfizer, mm-hmm. and then the interval is only like 4 weeks. With booster, there is an interval that is best to give the booster dose. So in the current data, it is usually on the third month of the last booster. I'm talking about the second booster. Mm-hmm. Third to fourth month of the last booster. So the interval is quite longer compared to a primary vaccine series and being given again a revaccination. Mm-hmm. Why longer? Why? Because we know that the longer the interval from the first vaccination and giving the booster, you have your immune system, you have time for your immune system to develop those antibodies, and more antibodies will develop.
But the formulation remains the same, whether you're talking about the first series or the two booster shots.
Yes, the same platform of the vaccine.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, let's talk about Deltacron. Dr. Solante, what do you know about it?
Currently, the data on Deltacron is still limited. Okay, and we know that these are occurring in places where there is an overlap of the Delta and that of the Omicron. And it is natural for that to occur, no? But we just don't know how these people that are infected with a mixed variant of concern behave. Are they exhibiting severe infection? Are they vaccinated and yet they still got the infection? Or are they only the vulnerable population and they're not the younger population? These are the information that we still don't have yet in our hands.
Mm. All right. So we do know that we are in the thick of preparations for the May 9 elections. All the other candidates, all candidates, Dr. Solante, have been talking about economic recovery, post-pandemic. But as he correctly pointed out, we're still in the middle of this pandemic, with a lot of individuals still unvaccinated, what do you want to hear from these candidates, Dr. Solante, about how they're going to deal with the pandemic and, you know, lead the country out of the COVID crisis?
Okay. Economic recovery is an important part of our recovery, you know, because that drives our status in terms of how we recovered from the pandemic. And the impact of the economic loss is really high because of the pandemic. But for the candidates to really have more significance in terms of contributing also to the control of the pandemic, they should also prioritize health, there should be plans when they go to each of this area for the campaign. They should prioritize what are their plans for this pandemic, because even if that will be May, we're still will be in the pandemic, and we should know what will be their plans be health in the health system with the vaccination, and in terms of moving forward with this pandemic, and how can we be pulled out from this pandemic. It's important to hear those plans from these candidates.
Let's go full circle now, Dr. Solante, and talk about China once again. You said a while ago that, you know, a resurgence is possible. But when you talk about controls and talking about what's happening in our Asian neighbors, do you think that it's time to put in some restrictions, close borders, even if the trend right now is to ease restrictions? Dr. Solante.
I think the IATF, I think, has already some plans for this, no? And in terms of entry, testing, and isolation and quarantine, that should be part of their plan now, especially in countries now where there is increase in the number of cases, in particular South Korea and China and even Hong Kong, no? Mm-hmm. So I think we know how to do it. We know how to implement this. It's just a matter of really pointing on when should we implement these particular measures, especially for tourists or for other people who are coming in the Philippines, coming from these countries with increasing number of cases.
And finally, all this talk about further easing restrictions to COVID alert level zero, is that something that you agree with, or do you think that that shouldn't be part of the conversation until after possibly the May 9 elections?
I fully agree with you. Personally, if we are talking about downgrading further below the alert level one, that should be after the election. Because as for me, the critical part now is this particular election where there is a possibility of a surge or a spike. One, because of the waning immunity. Second is that in areas where there is still a low vaccination rate. And number third, because of a possibility of a reinfection, especially for those vulnerable population.
Are we ready for a resurgence? Are we ready for the next wave? Have we made good use of the time when the numbers were down to make sure that the country, the healthcare system, is prepared in case that wave happens?
Yes. So in terms of treatment, we have available treatment to prevent mild, moderate to going severe. We have the antivirals. We have monoclonal antibodies. We have healthcare facilities that are already equipped in dealing with hospitalized. I think more or less in the part of the healthcare system, the hospital, we are ready.
Manpower?
Yes, that's part of it.
All right. We're going to have to leave it at that. Dr. Ronjin Solante there, infectious diseases expert. Thank you so much once again for joining us today. Take care and you keep safe. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
And we're going to take a break now. Still ahead, more humid days ahead as the dry or summer season officially begins in the Philippines. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. Back with more news. For the last stop in their tour of Mindanao, the tandem of Caliodi de Guzman and Walden Bello tackled children's rights in Davao City. Mike Navalio now joins us with that story. Mike?
Camino, on the last day of the Mindanao tour, presidential candidate Caliodin Guzman and vice presidential vet Walden Belio are visiting another remote community here in Hope Mountain, Ulas, Davao City, to attend a discussion on children's rights. Joining them is senatorial candidate Attorney Luke Espiritu. Caliodin blamed poverty as the cause of around 80% of children's problems, noting that malnutrition and lack of formal school training are all rooted in the lack of resources. He stressed the need for leaders who will cater to the needs of the poor instead of serving the interests of the rich. Part of the tandem's platform is to raise minimum wage for workers throughout the country to 750 pesos a day. The team revised tariffication law, which supposedly disadvantaged local farmers, and they want the government to provide basic services instead of privatizing them. Belio, for his part, said the reproductive health law should be properly implemented, and there's a need for Magna Carta for children. He lamented that the cybercrime prevention law has mostly been weaponized against critics instead of protecting children against sexual and violent content. Belio cited the cyber libel complaint filed against him by former Davao City Information Officer Jeffrey Tupas over a social media post tagging Tupas in a drug raid. He asked the audience, wasn't it true that Tupas was arrested? Although some witnesses said Tupas was in the drug raid, no case was filed against her. Belio also says the need for a real interagency task force to look after rights and welfare of the children. The Leodi Walden tandem has one more activity this afternoon before they wrap up their week-long Mindanao tour that began when they flew by commercial plane to Ozamiz City on Friday. They boarded a roll-on, roll-off ship to cross from Ozamiz City to Iligan City on Sunday before heading for Cagayan de Oro and Davao City on Monday on board a hired van. This is their longest campaign so farthest from Metro Manila. They met with farmers, fisher folk, urban poor, and other groups during their trip, and the other campaigns to feature huge crowds, artists and private planes or choppers. Yodi and Walden boarded public modes of transportation, but said the masses they seek to represent. Their visit is also intended to show there is no solid Mindanao and no solid Davao. Belio is running against Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte for vice president. The tandem is expected to board a commercial plane back to Manila tonight, and they will participate in the coming sponsor debate over the weekend. Termina.
Thanks a lot, Mike Navalio, there joining us on the line. Moving on, the tandem of Manila Mayor Francisco Isko Moreno Dumagoso and Dr. Willie Ong courting voters in the province of Bacolod. Their very own George Carino is there, and he now joins us with the latest. George? All right, it seems like we lost our connection there with George Carino. We're going to try and get him back on the line. In the meantime, it's official. The drier summer season has started here in the Philippines. ABS-CBN resident meteorologist Ariel Rojas now joins us to tell us more about this. Ariel.
Hi, good afternoon, Carmina. Pag-asa has officially declared the end of the Amihan season and the start of the dry season, which most of us know as the summer season. Technically, the months of March, April, and May are in the spring season in the Northern Hemisphere, where the Philippines is located. But these are the hottest months in our country, so the use of the term summer makes sense. Pag-asa also cautioned the public against heat stress and the wise use of water consumption in the rain-lean months. Meanwhile, the warm easterlies from the Pacific is a prevailing weather system, bringing humid conditions and chances of thunderstorms in the afternoon or evening across the archipelago. Severe thunderstorms are expected this afternoon and or evening over Benguet, Batangas, Mindoro, Bicol region, western and eastern Visayas, and most of Mindanao, which could trigger flash floods and landslides. Metro Manila will also expect thunderstorm this afternoon or evening, which usually leads to added traffic congestion in the evening rush hour. Thunderstorms are common during the dry season as the rising of warm air laden with moisture is accelerated by the hotter temperatures. That's the latest on the weather. This is Ariel Rojas. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Ariel. Take care and you keep safe. Back in the newsroom, China denies the Philippines' claims a Chinese Navy ship had intruded into the Sulu Sea. The Chinese Foreign Ministry says Beijing was merely exercising the right of innocent passage pursuant to the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea when its ship sailed through Philippine waters. It adds the Chinese passage was safe and legal. The Philippines earlier summoned the Chinese ambassador over what it called the illegal intrusion and lingering presence of the Chinese Navy ship. The Philippine Foreign Affairs Department said the Chinese ship stayed in the Sulu Sea from January 29th to February 1st, despite repeated orders by the Philippine Navy to leave immediately. The Philippine Amusement and Gaming Corporation vowing to strictly monitor online fighting, make that cockfighting, as government stops short of suspending its operations. PAGCOR chairperson Andrea Domingo says they have implemented a banning system wherein they encourage families to report relatives getting addicted to e-sabong. She adds 2 out of 8 e-sabong operators have been suspended after their review. PAGCOR estimates total government revenues from e-sabong to reach up to 8 billion pesos this year. President Duterte, the e-sabong, or for President Duterte, the e-sabong issue needs to be studied carefully.
I hate gambling. Noon, wala pa tayong masyadong problema sa pera. Hindi talaga ako pumayag. But then came the time when events happen, and again, konektado ito sa oil, because the pandemic and everything, kailangan ko ng look for sources. Maganda sana ito. But itong social cost ng ano, the social aspect of the gambling. I've heard stories, whether true or not, you'll have to validate it. I hope that well, sa PAGCOR, kayo na lang ang ano ko, whether you can commission somebody to do the surveys. Yung tama ng sa sugal sa mga tao. Some say that a lot of people are involved participating or betting the into the sabong games, at lahat na mga asawa, mga anak raw sumasali na.
And back on the campaign trail, we have him back on the line. George Carino is going to tell us about Manila Mayor Isko Moreno's visit to Bacolod. George, over to you.
Hi, Carmina. Mayor Isko Moreno de Magoso arrived Wednesday morning here at Bacolod for his two-day leg of a campaign sortie here in Negros provinces. And it was very surprising for the presidential candidate of Acción Democrático to see the crowd who waited outside the plaza of Silay City in Negros Occidental. We have to remember that based on the February 18 survey of the Pulse Asia, Mayor Isko Moreno had a dismal single-digit rating in that presidential survey. But what he saw today was a far cry from the single-digit rating that he got from the Pulse Asia. Let's hear a portion of the statement given by Mayor Isko Moreno Domagoso.
Well, ang nagbibigay sa akin ng lakas ng loob, yung taong bayan. Yung init ng tao sa pagtanggap sa atin, kulang i-cancel niya yung sinaing niya, i-cancel niya yung trabaho niya, o makita lang tayo. Tingin ko, that is the opposite of whatever numbers that they are showing. To my condition, whoever they want to.
That's the statement given by Mayor Isko Moreno Domagoso, the presidential candidate of Acción Democrático. Right now, Mayor Domagoso is moving around cities of Negros Occidental, and tomorrow he will move towards the city of Dumaguete on Negros Oriental to pursue his presidential campaign for the May 9 presidential elections. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. George Carino there joining us on the line. Keep safe, George. Take care. Back in the newsroom, we have this just in. President Duterte has approved the recommendations of his economic managers rejecting calls for the suspension of the excise fuel taxes to address the effects of skyrocketing fuel prices. Duterte also approved the proposal to provide unconditional cash transfers of 200 pesos per month to 12 million households. Finance Secretary Carlos Dominguez earlier said suspending fuel excise taxes will bring down the price of fuel by about 10 pesos per liter, but it will also result in revenue losses amounting to 105.9 billion pesos for this year alone. And before we go, Art Fair Philippines is set to hold a hybrid event this year. It will feature 46 exhibitors from the Philippines and abroad. Part of the lineup are Altro Mondo Gallery, Boston Art Gallery, Art Underground, Leon Gallery, and the Metro Gallery. Another feature in this year's Art Fair Philippines is Talks, a series of online discussions about art to be held on the event's website. Topics include art collecting, NFTs, and more detailed discussions on Art Fair Philippines' photo exhibits. The event will run from March 23rd until April 1. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.